Well, I'm sure all you good wives out there are delighted to hear what you're meant to be like this morning. The good news for us is that this reading is actually about all of the things that we would aim and strive to be. Wouldn't it be wonderful if we were all individually and as a community so filled with wisdom and grace and intelligence and enthusiasm and all of the things that were read in that first reading this morning? I think that reading is what we are all meant to aim for. And then the second reading from James, I think you took the short straw there in some ways, is about all the things that we do wrong, that we excel at, that we want and grasp for things, that we get impatient, that we hurt people. So it's kind of like the best and the worst in those first two readings. But I think the gospel is what really helps us today to live as people with all of our failings, and to actually strive to be better than we think we can be. Jesus is helping us with that this morning. So there I was, living very far away from all my family and friends, all the familiar and comfortable places of my life. And I didn't really know that many people yet, and I hadn't really embedded myself in the community. It was a strange and exciting time in my life, but it was during that time that it happened. That was when I heard. I heard that the parish hall of the church where I had begun my ministry was being demolished. The place of youth groups and dinners and dramas and volleyball games, and parish events, and the first time I ever presided at the Easter Vigil, we met in the darkened parish hall and walked across the parking lot to the church. The place where I had been formed as a priest, the place where I slept over, well, slept is not really the word, with the youth group. The place where I did sleep on the couch often because I worked late at night. This space was going to be demolished. Now, you need to understand, it was ugly as sin. It was big, it was a barn, it was built in the 1930s, so that tells you pretty much everything. It was filled with asbestos. It was beginning to fray more and more and more around the edges. There were structural issues. There were lots of reasons that this was an awful place. However, I was upset. How dare they change the place that I loved? The place where I had gained some of my own self-understanding. The place where I laughed and cried and built relationships and ministered and was ministered to. How dare they? But why was I so upset? For heaven's sakes, it was not a beautiful spot. Why would this bother me so much when I actually enjoy the process of adventure and change? After all, that's why I was on the other side of the world. Why now? Well, I was in a new place. I didn't have any memories or any experience, really, where I was. I hadn't established a way of being. I wasn't familiar or comfortable. That's when we get bogged down. That's when we want to hang on to those things that have become so important to us. And what happens then? We become afraid. Afraid of loss, afraid of being disconnected from a time or a place or an experience in our lives that was so important to us. So what do? We get a death grip on those experiences, on those feelings, on those places, whether it's a church, a building, a home, a relationship, or community. It doesn't matter. We hold on with all our might because we're afraid that the things we value, the things that have meaning for us, the things that give us belonging, are all disappearing. Fear has a hostile takeover of our thinking and acting. And we have two things we usually do. We either get completely paralyzed and can't do anything at all, or we go on an overzealous campaign to firm up our position, to remain in a place that feels safe, even if part of our brain is saying you're being a jerk. We hang on to it. And that is exactly what the disciples were doing this morning. Jesus, they have become familiar. They have found a way of being. They have new patterns of acting and thinking. And Jesus tells them in today's gospel that that's ending. He's going to be killed. He's going to go away for a bit. He's going to be raised and resurrected. They have no freaking idea what that means. How could they? This was a new place. They have no memories. They have no experiences of this. They do have no established way of thinking about it or being in it. They are confused. They deny it. And they're so afraid that what do? They try to firm up their position. And they have one heck of an argument about who is going to be the greatest. Who's going to be the greatest? That's what we can decide, is who's the greatest. No, I'm better than you because da-da-da-da-da. Oh, no, that guy, he's at the bottom of the list because he did whatever. They can refer to their experience. They can refer to the things that they know and grab onto that. But Jesus' message is that everything, every single thing is changing. Everything must die and be reborn. Familiar paradigms of power and honor are changing. To jockey and to seize power is the old way of living. Real power, life-giving power, is not found in that. Does this sound like perhaps the Anglican Church at times to you? Because the old ways are not the ways they are now. Yes, we carry some experiences and some richness, a lot of it, and a lot of tradition and things that are life-giving to the world. But when we are threatened, we hang on to it. We don't want to be vulnerable. But real power, life-giving power, is found in vulnerability, in humility, in welcoming and serving those who can't understand, maybe, or can't reciprocate. Those, all they can do is offer themselves and be themselves. And Jesus, to make his point, takes a child. Today at 8 a.m. and at 10:50, when that gospel was read, the child in the church spoke. Both services. How wonderful. How blessed are we that the voice of a child reminds us that that's what we're meant to be, vulnerable. Children don't hold any power. They don't have any clout. They can't get you great tickets at the Red Blacks game. They can't pull any favors for you. They can't improve your standing in society or help you settle into a new life. In fact, they do quite the opposite. And Jesus is telling us today that, and the disciples, that greatness is measured by those who have absolutely nothing to offer us. We are called to love and to welcome and to support others without the expectation that it will get us anything in return, including the satisfaction of having helped them. Including the smugness or entitlement that we feel because we were able to do something for someone else. Jesus says that everything must change. Everything is changing, whether we like it or not. And that our self-focused nature, our all-about-me attitudes that we easily slip into, as we heard about in James, they must go. Rather, we're to be about the love of Christ, all about God's welcoming grace, all about sharing the gifts of the Spirit, not holding on to them, and saying that our gifts are better than your gifts. It's all about living through the loss and the fear, because those things are real. Every time we move or change house or change where we are in a relationship or have a building demolished, for heaven's sakes, we have those feelings and they are real. But all that dying is needed for us to learn to be really us. All about being reborn is a way of life that loves and serves and welcomes others. And in the midst of all that, we need to remember God is brilliant, absolutely brilliant at the whole new life thing. That's what God's all about. We don't have to scurry around trying to firm up our positions or secure our place. Our place is already secure in God's heart. Last week there was an ordination at our cathedral. And as I came out in the dark, the cathedral is now beautifully lit and has a wonderful forecourt that's very welcoming. It's a lovely gathering space. And yet, in the middle of it, is a bench that has the statue of a homeless Jesus on it. And what intrigues me about that is not so much the juxtaposition of those things, but of the fact that there is a space at Jesus' feet where you can sit. So Jesus is lying on the bench, and where the feet are is where there's room for a person to sit. And I went and sat there for a few moments in the dark and the light and thought about this grand ordination we've just been at, where people were made priests and deacons like us. And yet there we were, reminded that the people that we are to serve are just like Jesus, homeless, lying on a bench perhaps, and who people that we often think have nothing to give us. And yet, they're the ones who offer us new life. So back to that church hall that got demolished. And it was, let me tell you, I saw pictures. It was quite a grand event. It was blown up and leveled to the ground. And it became, you guessed it, St. John's and St. Luke's, a parking lot. However, they built next to the church a new home. To me, when the lights are on, it reminds me of a chicken coop. It kind of has little windows arranged. And when the light shines out, I just can kind of hear chickens in there. I don't know why. But I had occasion to visit it this year for an event. And I have to say, yeah, the stuff was gone. All the things that I remember about the old building, I don't even have to close my eyes to see them all. But what was in that new space was light and beauty and something that actually works for this present day and time for that place where they are. So there's no more asbestos and no more bad things and there were no more memories, but there's a garden that surrounds it. It has a labyrinth, a place for prayer, and a scattering garden for the remains of the loved ones of that parish who used to live under the altar. And there are bathrooms. This is a very big deal. There were never bathrooms in the church. There are now bathrooms. And so it is more welcoming. It is more loving. It is more supportive of the community that is there. And it is shining. And it is used more now than it ever has been. So my memories of what happened there haven't actually disappeared. But my fear has abated because I don't have to hold on to the space that held them. Rather, it's been burst open. It's been enhanced. And new life has come from that. I had to let go of it the way it exactly was. But in letting go, in letting it sit for a while, and letting it rise again, new life emerged. New experiences and memories are already forming of a new space. When we can recognize our fear in the midst of change, let go of grasping and jockeying for our agendas and power, and trust in being held secure in God's heart, take the risk of humbly serving without ego and sacrifice our comfort, generosity, grace, purpose, hope, and resurrection are found. Then we will draw near to God and God to us. Amen.